On today's episode, I'm sitting down with my man, Adam Ludlow. Adam is the owner of Rewired Fitness Company. He's been on the podcast before. That's his micro gym up in Spokane, Washington. But he also owns Rewired Business Coaching. And Adam and me were asked to participate in an event with gym owners earlier this month. And we got together and, you know, in between this event, we were talking and he was telling me all about the DISC assessment that he has been performing for small businesses of all kinds. And I got curious. I'd heard of DISC. I've heard of DISC and Enneagram and Gallup Strength Finder and these different personality type tests. And as we got into it, I was really impressed with what he was sharing with me regarding DISC. So Adam sent me a DISC assessment. I filled it out. I completed it. And on this podcast, he's literally, we're going to go through my results as to my personality type, my strengths, my weaknesses, how people should communicate with me, how I'm likely to communicate with other people, what roles on a team I would be best for. And we're going to do this all in real time with you guys there listening. So I'm excited to do that part. But where this really came in and I got real excited was for you, the gym owner, or anyone who owns a small business on the HR side. Hiring is hard enough, but if you had a DISC assessment to know what your strengths and weaknesses are, what your communication preferences and deficits are, you could hire people for very specific roles. Like, you don't need the same kind of person doing admin as you would an extroverted coach on the floor. And with all the lack of speed at which most of us operate on the HR side, it'd be better if we measured twice and cut once. And that's what I think a DISC assessment could be incredibly beneficial for your business. So enjoy this conversation with myself and Adam Ludlow. What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. I've got my good friend and colleague, Mr. Adam Ludlow, on the podcast again. Adam and I just got to spend some time together. We were up in the Denver area. And we were up there at a business conference that Evan Lindsay was running, and we were both given a little prezo at. And when we weren't there, we were at the casino till 2 a.m. Having cocktails. So it was a good time seeing you, bud. And this is like talking with Adam, and amongst all the shit we talked about over that weekend, you talked to me about this DISC assessment that I heard the acronym. I couldn't tell you what it was. But then we were driving back to the casino after Evans one night and you gave me a whole rundown on it. I was like, this sounds fucking incredible. So do me a favor, give everyone your, 2 minute kind of quick intro if they haven't listened to the other episodes you've been on, and kind of how you got into this whole DISC thing and what the fuck it is.
I appreciate it, Sue. And just for the record, we didn't lose any money at the casino. Okay.
It was all donated to the bar.
Yeah. That's not losing money in my book. So we're doing great. But yeah, man, I appreciate you. Think the world of you. So excited we get to chat again today. If you haven't listened to any episodes we've done in the past, my name is Adam. I own Rewired Fitness Co., which is a single brick and mortar coach led strength and conditioning gym in Spokane, Washington. And I also own Rewired Business Coaching. So my baby that I've had for about 10 years is the gym, which is Rewired Fitness Co. And then the last 2 to 3 years, I've dove a lot deeper into business coaching and some consulting work. And I work with single or small team owner operators that are in the retail space, mostly service-based industries. And I work one-on-one with clients, trying to help them thrive more in business and in life. Honestly, I love what I get to do. I enjoy it a ton when I'm not working. Spending time with my wife, Katie, and our 3 daughters. We actually just got back from we went to Disneyland and to San Diego for the last week, which was a ton of fun. So put my daughters right here to Disneyland one time as a family. So it's going to be a yes day for like 2-3 days. It was super fun. We went really hard and literally did everything, and I am exhausted.
Dude, my kid goes to Disney on Friday, but that's something she does with her mom. I've always been like, I love you to death. You and me will go to 3 NFL games a year, 3 NBA games a year, 1 MLS, but I'm never taking you to fucking Disney World. That's just not happening.
Well, you're a much smarter man than me, Stu, so props to you. I'm not an overly creative guy, so I have 3 small businesses. They're all called Rewire, and they all have very similar brands, and that's how I roll.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Now, talk to me just go into DISC real quick. What it is, and how did you get, like, How is this something you wanted to have in your consulting toolkit?
For sure. So DISC is an assessment-based tool that helps you understand how do you think, how do you see the world and problems, how do you see work and career, who do you naturally work well with, where do you tend to have problems. So it's a personality profiling tool. But what's different about the DISC is, A, it's been around longer than most, but B, it's specifically only designed for career and work. So like people ask a lot, so is it like the Enneagram? I'll say, dude, the Enneagram's awesome. Love it. There's absolutely a place for it. But that's more general life personality. The DISC is truly just for work and career, which is where I work with people. So how I came across the DISC was on the recipient end. I did my first DISC assessment, 2011. I was on a team of some friends that moved to Spokane from the other side of the state, and we launched a church, and we were growing quickly and running into some problems that you do in any organization when you grow quickly. And we hired a business coach that helped us, and he used the DISC on our main team. And I sat down and was like, this thing's incredible. Like, there's like close to 50 pages literally talking about me, and everything here seems to be pretty accurate. And I remember just the takeaways I got from that was like, wow, I feel like actually I understand me a little bit better. I understand why I'm having problems with certain personalities more frequently than others, why people see me differently than I see myself. Like, I just had a lot of ahas to the point where I didn't just take the DISC and get something out of it and then like never touch it again, like a book on the bookshelf. For me, it was more like, that's something I probably should use a little more frequently. So at that point, I was running a small gym in Spokane that I didn't own yet, but I was the manager of, and was getting ready to start my own gym, which is now Rewired Fitness Co. And the DISC honestly was like one of those tools that I could just pull out every day and have in my tool belt of, all right, here's why I feel like I'm stuck at this part in the business. Here's why I'm having a hard time with this type of personality. But it just gave me tools where I felt like it had tons of practical application that allowed me to go further and go faster.
And with that, the biggest thing, obviously, when you were talking to me about the DISC was when we hire, most people don't abide by hire fast and fire faster. That's how I always rolled. I had no problem just snapping, I know I just hired you literally 6 weeks ago, and now we are undoing that. We are unringing that bell. For most small business owners, it's a long process. Whether it be emotional or maybe it's inventory. They like, fuck, I want to fire this guy, but I can't find anybody. Mm. So the DISC to me kind of seemed like a way to A, avoid hopefully some bad hiring decisions, because the DISC will allow you to know who's going to work best with your team and what are some other people's strengths. But I also thought it was like a great self-awareness tool. A lot of people that say, oh yeah, no, I'm very self-aware. And it's very much like a Gary Vee term that got very buzzworthy, right? I have a lot of self-awareness. Yeah, but if your self-awareness analysis is your own, it's very rare that someone is so fucking self-aware. They're not going to have their own, inherent bias as to who they say they are. No one's walking around like, I don't know, I kind of am a fucking piece of shit. Like, I just kind of am a kind of a piece of shit, and I lie sometimes, and I talk a lot of shit. I don't follow up with it. But now you have a neutral third party, aka our friend Mr. DISC, that can go ahead and call you, give it to you straight, and you'd be like, okay. Like you said, when you saw yours, when I was looking at mine, and Adam's going to be going through mine in real time here, my results on this here on the podcast. But I saw mine. I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. I thought the same thing when I read yours, and I was like, yeah, this is Stu. Like, if I didn't know him and I read through this and I met him, I'd be like, oh, this lines up. Like, I get this. So I think coming back to like the hiring process, something that I've seen the DISC help so many businesses with in the last few years is there's a lot of transition and turnover happening in a lot of different industries right now. Like, a lot of people are with different jobs they were pre-COVID or during COVID, or they've moved, or their companies had to pivot or expand. And with that, I mean, the wrong hire can be very costly, both in time and money, but the right hire can also be an incredible investment that can leverage you further and faster. So having a tool where you're taking the guesswork out is probably worth paying attention to. But also not just that, like even with current staff, I'm like, well, we're not looking to make any big hires right now. I think we've kind of got the team we need. We'll probably add some down the road. Sure, I get that. Even though you should always be recruiting, that can be a reality for some people. But what if you could understand your current team better? Like, how much more could you accomplish? Even if you're a small team or a big team, but being able to know, here's some actual third-party tools that if used correctly, you're going to understand who are you working with, how do they like to be spoken to, how do they usually handle stress, what's likely a sweet spot for them, and how does that line up with the overall company's missions and goals? Like, that's a pretty worthwhile tool to make a small investment and get a big return from.
I agree. And one thing I'm very bullish on, you guys, when you're hiring people, there are laws in this country that prohibit us from excluding people from employment due to certain things, right? Okay, so for example, you cannot discriminate against hiring somebody because of their race, their gender, right? Their religion. These are things that will get you in a lot of trouble. However, I tell people all the time, but what I do want you to discriminate against people on, like I want you to discriminate the fuck out of people against, is their personality, their vibe. Like, I want you to do some research on them on Instagram and be like, this just isn't the type of person I want in my company. Those are not protected classes, you know, within employment laws. I don't care, in any state. So the DISC is one that you could use in a potential hiring scenario. And you could potentially refuse, I'm not going to hire them. They're a high D, and I don't need any of those on my team right now. So it allows you with, you know, immunity to discriminate against certain classes of hires in a category that is not protected.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think of one of the presentations that I'll give to like local businesses, whether it's in person or on Zoom, is how to find and keep great staff. Seems to be a problem a lot of people are trying to work through. And not that I've got this figured out better than the next guy, but something I really do believe in is hiring should really filter through the three C's: the calling, the character, and the competency. Are they like called to this type of job and this type of team and this type of culture? Are they the right character for that fit, which I think is where the DISC is wildly helpful. So you're taking the guesswork out, because in real time, you don't know someone well enough to really make that a guess. You can make it an educated guess at best, but like having real tools like the DISC to say, no, this is really who they are. They don't just interview well. They're actually this type of person, or not this type of person. And then competency, you can teach that later. Like for gyms, when I work with them on staff, dude, are they called? Do they have the right character to be on your team and fit your culture? If they've got those things, you can teach them how to coach better later, and you can make that onboarding progress, you know, refined and do well. But if they don't have the right calling, this isn't going to work. If they don't have the right character, what happens if they stay? Like, that's the worst thing that could happen, right? Is you got the wrong apple on the wrong team. And if you have tools like the DISC, I'm not saying that's the only thing you could use, but it is one of the greatest filters you could use to say, no, like when I look at Stu's profile, I know that he is not the guy I want to come and clean the gym. It's not him. Not the right profile I want. I want him to be in a completely different role than that. But maybe I'm looking to add to my cleaning team. Well, I want them to have a certain type of personality. I want them to have certain values. I want them to see the world a certain way. And those might not be my strong suit, but if I know what that profile needs to look like, as I'm interviewing and getting to know those people, like, gives me like real tactical steps to filter them through. That's going to A, save me a bunch of time and a bunch of energy training and hiring new staff, but also it's probably going to allow me to find the right person for the right role, getting them in the right seat at the right time. And that's pretty big leverage for anybody.
I can't echo that enough. There are so many gym owners listening to this right now that are like, they've got an employee and they've said this exact thing. I don't understand what the big deal is. Why can't they just clean the bathroom? Or why can't they just do this? You know, again, it's a pissant task. It's not difficult. And it's because certain people's brains don't compute certain things. Like, for example, Pushing keys on a keyboard, doing administrative bullshit task on your member management software is not difficult. Your mom could likely take her fingers and type fucking keys. But if she does not have the comprehensive understanding of how tech works and this system talks to this and what Zapier is and shit like that, she's not the right person. Just because you can physically do something, I don't get it. He just has to take the trash out and refill the fucking soap in the bathrooms, blah, blah. I'm like, it doesn't compute in his brain. Like, you know, my fiance, it's like, Stuart, how many times are you going to walk past that fucking pot or that thing in the house or whatever it may be? I don't know. Maybe it just doesn't compute in my brain to fucking, oh, that doesn't belong there. I should put that where it belongs, right? That for some people, that just doesn't populate in it. And that's what I think the disc gives you great objective insight into somebody. And then you just have to accept it. Like, well, I want them to be different. Well, listen, buddy, you're going to have a lot of fucking hiring headaches in your career if you're constantly going to go against the grain of who people are and expect them to be different.
So true.
Well, I think we both probably learned on the wrong end of that at certain points in our careers.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, 100%. 100%. I think I told you that I've told the story 1,000 times. Like, you know, I had to find a new commercial cleaning company. I knew how much I was paying them. And I remember going to Isaac, my GM at the time, like, hey, save myself 25%. I'll tack it on to your salary. You'll make an extra whatever it is, couple thousand dollars per month. Would you want to clean the gym? And dude, with a straight face, this chick didn't miss the beat. She goes, get the fuck out of here. You couldn't pay me any amount of money to ever clean the gym. And I loved your three, like the character one especially, because I've used Gino Wickman's Traction, the GWC. Yep. Do they get it? Do they want it? Do they have a capacity to do it? And I'd probably build in like a disc profile into that capacity to do it. But cool. I like the character part of it as well that you mentioned. So let's get into disc. Start breaking this down. What people are trying to figure out, what the acronym stands for, all that. And then fucking share up a screen and let's go ahead and see how fucked up I am.
I mean, I think we all know that that's the case too. So
no analysis needed.
Stu, talk me through sharing on this entire screen.
Yeah, you probably just go entire screen and then just pull up. There you go.
Okay, can you see all that?
I can.
Okay, cool. All right, I'm going to walk you through some of the main parts of the disc. So again, this is almost a 50-page report, all on Stu. I want to start, and we're going to jump around a little bit, but I want to start at the main bones of this. What does DISC stand for? So D-I-S-C, okay? These are different personality traits. Everybody's got some element of these four. They're graded on a list from 100 being the highest, 0 being the lowest. Then there's this midline, that dark gray. That's 50. Anything above 50 is going to be pretty noticeable. Or anything super low or super high, like close to 100 or close to 0, those tend to be pretty noticeable. So on top of that, you have two types of profiles. You have a natural profile, which is your sweet spot. This is where you prefer to work. This is how you prefer to work. This is you not under a bunch of stress, just kind of in a good zone, in a good season. And I always make the joke, this is where people want to be, but not where they tend to find themselves. Okay. Now, against that, you have the adaptive style. This is the profile you tend to pivot to under some stress. So like when COVID hit, everybody figured out what their adaptive style was very, very fast. Okay. A couple of things I look for right out of the gates. Does the natural style and the adaptive style look very similar to one another? They don't need to be perfectly identical, but if they're pretty similar to one another, we know a few things right out of the gate. A, this person knows who they are. And B, they probably like their job because they're not having to do like a 180 every time stress hits. So if this profile from natural to adaptive looked like completely polar opposite, that usually tells me A, they really don't like the role that they're in, or B, they're just super lost.
They're having to fake it when they're at work, that type of scenario.
Totally. Yeah. So like I've shared this before, but when I've done this with teams before, say there's like, you know, a real estate company that I'm doing some training with, and we'll go through everybody's disc and I'll see someone's profile come back and they're really high DI on natural and basically SC is like non-existent. And then on adaptive, they're the exact opposite. They have like no DI and they're really high SC. I can go up to that person and say like, how's this going? And 9 times out of 10, I don't like doing this because it's a touchy emotional moment, but 9 times out of 10, like they'll just say, actually, this sucks. Like, I'm really not happy with this job or this role or this team, like, but something is off. So biggest
thing. Can you give it what, just a, what DISC, what they stand for?
Yeah, let's dig in there. So D stands for dominant. Okay. Which I'll go down in just a minute and talk about what Stu's D looks like, cause it's rather strong, but I is influence. S is for steady and C is for compliant. So with that, D and I are faster. They tend to be a little more action-oriented. But pure D, okay, which Stu's got quite a bit of, and for those of you listening, I think you'll agree with all this. Stu's natural is 93 and adaptive is 82. Both very dominant, both his strongest letters, both super strong. D is dominant, so think pioneering, decisive, task-oriented, prefers speed, likes to get shit done, not afraid to start things, even if they haven't thought through all the steps it's going to take to finish it. But like tip of the spear, let's get shit done. If they were a car, they would be a Ferrari. They can go really fast. They might not take a bunch of people with them. They might not think about safety. They might not think about procedure and precaution, but they can hit speeds that other people can't hit, and they like to go fast, and they don't like things in their way. They tend to see the world as obstacles to overcome. So Stu's sitting there just, you know, relishing in that because he knows he's an absolute pure D. So, and to put my cards on the table, I am too. I'm like a 96 on natural and like a 92 on adaptive. So that's probably part of where Stu and I naturally get along well. But if we were in a room together, working together for, say, a week, we would get a lot of crap done. We just might miss some details. Okay.
Now, dudes, people who are two Ds, is that like two alphas? Do they butt heads? And like, are there more conflicts amongst big D energy?
It's a great question. Where the most conflict happens is when Ds don't get to move fast enough. So what you tend to find is, let's say if you and I were going to tackle a project together, if a sweet spot for two really high Ds is give them just enough guardrails that they can drive fast on the road in front of them. That's the best analogy that I think I can use for that. Meaning,
if you said, hey, I need you guys to create this org chart, this payroll structure, you can only spend $20,000 a month, but figure it out any way you want. Whatever you think, just only spend $20,000 a month in payroll in the org chart. Go for it. Get it to me in 2 weeks. Is that like a limited? Is that like the amount of structure where it's like, okay, we just can't go over 20 grand, but we can come up with whatever we want in here?
We would probably get it done really fast, and we would... it would be done, but it wouldn't be perfect.
Sure.
Makes sense. So I think it, like a sweet spot for Ds is creating something out of nothing whets the appetite for the threat. High D profile. I probably don't need a lot of people telling me what to do. I probably work a little more independently or autonomous. I probably don't need to like have someone hold my hand. What I do need is just give me enough knowledge and enough guardrails that I can go as fast as I want, but get out of my way.
Yeah.
So that's a sweet spot for like, I know a lot of gym owners listen to this podcast, where Ds do really well is like in the startup phase, Ds are super valuable. Like, dude, you just got to get shit done. Like, there's so many things you need to do to get a gym open or a second location open or a new program launched or whatever that is. Ds are going to shine. It might not be perfect. It might like, you know, caused a few bumps along the way, but when there's enough guardrails to say, okay, the lease is signed, the money's in the bank, we know what we want to do, go. Like, D's know how to move faster and better than anybody in that scenario.
Makes sense. And that's, yeah. You know, you think that's even like with the Jim Real Estate Company, that my favorite stage of this whole thing has been, you know, as Evan would say, moving fast and breaking things, just making notes of it and making sure I only break it the same way once. Right. But my goal is to fail fast as quick as possible and then move on to the next thing.
Which, if you're a high D and you're hearing that, your natural thought is like, well, yeah, that's the best way to do it. For people that are like high S, high C, we'll get to them later. They're like, no, like, that's dumb. Why would you do that? And it doesn't mean someone's right or wrong, but A, it's really good. If you work for yourself, it's good to know which camp you tend to fall in. And especially if you have staff above or below or with you, it's really helpful to know if you got a really high D, I can talk to a high D in a way that I can't talk to any other letter. Like if I have two on my staff, I know I can tell you big vision, big goals, big accomplishments. Let's go, baby. I need you to be a workhorse today and just get it done. That's all you need to know. And then I can just check in with you tomorrow.
When you first started doing DISC analysis, did you ever use different adjectives instead of high and low? Did you ever start with like, listen, Stu, you're really big D, and then that just backfired on you in a meeting one time? Or I'm just picturing you, someone having to strategically like not think to it. Like they go at it like, oh yeah, this guy's big D all the way. And then everyone's snickering in the meeting. Like I've been laughing internally. Every time you said Stu has big, like high D, I've been laughing internally because I have the intelligence and, you know, comedic relief of a 9-year-old.
Every time I've done it in a group presentation setting, it's like everybody has the humor of a 4-year-old. So I believe you had to leave that day, but when I was talking in Denver with Evan Lindsay's group with the Gym Builder Method, and I made a comment like that, not thinking about it, but I'm like, this is where that big D energy needs to go.
Yeah.
Pause for a second. And like, there was the chuckles and I'm like, yeah, it was funny. Like we can laugh. That was. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't think. I don't think I've seen a lot of people with a high amount of D succeed with heavy amounts of oversight over the top of them. What I mean by that is when someone's a high D, they usually will eventually work into a role that has less friction in front of them. So for example, I know some high Ds that they thrive as long as they work themselves into a role or into a task within the company where they get to be a little more autonomous and work at the speed they want to work at. So oftentimes you'll see people that are high D, like they'll end up in sales. Just naturally, they're like, yeah, like the world's mine. I'm going to go tackle it. Let's go. They tend to work for themselves. You've seen a really big rise in like the solopreneur world and people trying to work more independently. In America, in our workforce, in our culture, we have a high value for high letter Ds.
Like you just go back to the printout, because when you're sharing your screen, it's still got both of us on the camera. And even 100. Just put the green button, make that full screen because it's still showing you and me. It's still going to impose our faces here. Perfect. That way, because now we're going to get into some details. Well, here's a question then. I mean, to cut you off, if I'm hiring somebody and they're high D, and let's say I'm hiring them and they're a young coach, could I make an assumption that at some point, if I don't give them the autonomy to move fast, they may want to try to they could be the profile of someone who would want to open their own thing.
Totally. Totally. They're going to want opportunity within what you're doing to go and create and not just hold your hand and wait for you to tell them to do something, but be able to be their own boss.
Yeah. So like more entrepreneurially.
Entrepreneur to entrepreneur, somewhere on that scale. These are going to end up there. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
Yep. What I've found is when that doesn't happen, they tend to bounce from company to company way too frequently.
Got it.
Yep. So when I work with a high D who's an employee, one of the things I'll usually ask is like, okay, so tell me who you worked for before this. Okay. And who before that? And who before that? You know, the list is fairly long and fairly short time span. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you tend to run into the same problem at the same, you know, the same type of problem, just a different company, which is good for them to know. So I tend to, in my world, right, I work with a lot of small to medium-sized business owners. These who I work with the most, just by the nature of the letter. You know, I tend to be a problem solver, tend to be an entrepreneur, tend to be very direct and decisive. That tends to be people that work for themselves. Okay, so our second letter, which Stu's got a fair amount of, and I'm not surprised to see this. I didn't think it'd be your highest, but I knew it'd be up there. Letter I. Again, this is influence. So Stu is 64 for his natural, drops a little bit to 58 under stress. So both of the midline, both noticeable. If you hung out with Stu for like 2 hours, you'd probably see this come out. I is very fast, similar to the D, but as opposed to being task-focused and task-oriented, I's are people-focused. So they tend to be very extroverted, tend to be outgoing. Life is a party, and they want everybody to be there. So if you think of like D is a Ferrari and I is a party bus. So they're not always thinking about, you know, safety and regulations, but they're thinking about, let's just get everybody and make sure we're having a good time. So when you show up to a party, letter I's are so noticeable because they're in like five conversations at once. Like, oh, hey, how are you? Oh my God, he's here. Hey, oh my God. Like they're talking in a bunch of different little conversations. They're moving around the room. They tend to be warm. They tend to be extroverted, tend to be a little bit louder. They like to talk with their hands and be expressive. In the gym setting, a lot of group-led classes tend to be with coaches that have a lot of letter I. And that makes sense, right? Like they're warm, they're fun, they're friendly, they're outgoing, they're expressive. They talk with their hands. They like people. They like energy. That tends to be who you would see in a group class setting. So for a lot of people listening, particularly if you've got like a team and you're in the gym setting, you probably have a lot of I's on your staff. I mean, most class-led based gyms are going to have a lot of high I coaches. So some defaults of the I is they can very easily lose track of time. I always make the joke of I's tend to have 3-hour lunches when an email would have been fine. So like they can get lost in time. They get lost in tasks. They tend to focus on people. They tend to focus on, you know, what's directly in front of them and how fun it is, but maybe forget what the actual task is at hand. So like when a coach coaches a class and let's say they're a really high, like pure letter I, the likelihood that they're going to go over the allotted time is very strong. The likelihood that they get lost in conversations is strong. Likelihood that they don't start on time is pretty strong, but they're probably going to make sure everyone had a great time and felt really loved. And they literally touched like every person in the room with a high five or an attaboy or a coaching cue. Like they can work the room better than almost any letter. There's your letter I.
You're a basketball guy. So would like a D be the guy who's, they want the ball fourth quarter, 3 seconds left on the clock, and it's getting put in bounds. They want the ball, whereas the I is going to pass first before looking to shoot.
Yeah, so I've taught this before, actually, with the basketball team, which was like the coolest thing ever. D is Michael Jordan. So okay. if I'm aging myself a little bit on that one,
you're good. Fuck anyone who doesn't know that reference can eat a dick. I don't care. So then what's I then? Pippen? Rodman?
Let me think of a high I. High I. Let me think of a good basketball analogy for high. It'll come to me.
Is it more an assist focus, like team guy?
I think they're like the life of the party, the energy, the captain. I think you see high eyes come out in, I'm thinking of like in March Madness. In the NCAA tournament, a high eye is like the guy that hits the game winner, gets the crowd to rush the floor, is like waving the towels, is like super high energy on camera, like wants everybody to be part of the interview. So I see high eyes as like probably in his heyday, I think LeBron was that in a lot of ways on like Team USA. He was kind of like the more outspoken one. He was kind of like a jokester. He was fun, but like he wanted everybody to win with him. Now LeBron's obviously got a very serious side to him too. Jordan was a pure D, and you can see it. Like I think The Last Dance is like one of the greatest sports documentaries ever. And one of my favorite clips from that is when Jordan just starts crying. He's like, I play the game a certain way. And if you don't want to play it that way, that's fine. But if you're going to be on my team, we're playing it this way.
Yeah. Like, or like a Kobe who hits a buzzer beater. And instead of going nuts, it's just like, right, I'm going to take a shower. I'm coming back out here to shoot another 1,000 shots.
Yeah. So like, I think Shaq's got a lot of eye in his heyday of like, he was fun. He was energetic. He was an entertainer. He knew how to work a crowd, but like the dude was a threat on the floor. Like when you think of like a Kobe and a Jordan, they're like, we care about winning. Like Kobe's such a high D that like when you listen to Chris Bosh talk about Kobe when they're doing like the Hall of Fame inductee, and he's like, you know, the goal was to be the first one at breakfast. So I get up early. I'm like 6 a.m. I got all my stuff on. I'm at breakfast, and I see Kobe sitting next to me with ice on his knees, and the dude had already worked out. Like, high D's are Kobe in that scenario.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to do more than the next guy. That's how a high D sees the world. And I is probably, like, joking around at breakfast, having fun, making jokes. They're likable. They're fun. They're warm. But, like, they're not thinking about getting up before everybody else to go work out.
Got it.
Okay. Yep. Yep. It's a good question. Now I'm going to be thinking about who is a high I basketball player. I think Shaq might be the one that comes to mind the most. But I'll let you know if I name another one. So, okay. Now D and I both move fast. Okay. D's move fast with tasks. I's move fast with people. We're going to go to the other side of the spectrum. Now we have S and C. Okay. Stu is a 7 for S, both natural and adaptive. It doesn't change. Okay. Which basically means it's pretty close to non-existent. It's very, very low. Okay. I'm actually, I think I'm a 56 on my natural, and maybe a 52 on adaptive. Mine's like barely above the midline. S is steady. This is like a person that is consistent, is loyal, looks for value, but they love people, especially in a one-on-one setting. So D's are a Ferrari. I's are a party bus. S is like that loyal F-150 with 300,000 miles on it that like just will never die. It's like the loyal farm truck, right? And S is a great listener, great interpersonal communication skills, tend to see the world oftentimes kind of creatively. They have a good level of stubbornness to them. They like to work at a slower pace. They don't like to be rushed. They might take a little longer to make a decision, but they're thinking about how's this going to affect the people? How's this going to affect our company? How's this going to affect the value and the client experience of our gym? They're thinking about those things that add depth to the business. So S's tend to not move on from things very fast. S's tend to stay with things for a while. S's tend to prefer a much slower pace of which they get to work. So oftentimes if someone's a really, really high S, they can get ran over because they want to work slower than maybe the task would allow them to. So in a gym setting, we have a lot of coaches on our team that are fairly high S, kind of SI combos tend to be most of our class coaches. S's are some of the best one-on-one coaches I've ever seen. They like to work a little slower. They get to in a one-on-one setting. They like to work a little more interpersonal. They get more of that in a one-on-one setting than a packed out class. It doesn't mean they can't do anything else. It just means that's kind of a sweet spot for them. For me to go do like a one-on-one session like that, I want to go faster than that and get more done in an hour. But for a coach who's got a really high S profile, oh man, that might be a major sweet spot for them. Being able to slow it down, work methodically, work at a controlled pace, not have to rush just because the classes we have to rush. S is so good at that one-on-one, steady, loyal, value-seeking lens that they see the world. That makes sense on the S stoop.
Yeah, like you would want the person maybe who's doing the programming for the entire gym, you might want to be an S, someone who's going to be consistent with the methodology, but be thoughtful, not rush through it at the, you know, and that's going to be fine. We'll figure it out if it's broken later. Like some, you know, you want your architect to be an S. You want your heart surgeon to be an S, right? Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yep. And I think S's are like, they're like the really cool grandpa that would focus on just you and you could go fishing with. Like that, that's an S of like, they're not distracted by everything else going on. They're actually intentional with you. They're listening. If you go back to that same party that the letter I is at, and I is again, fast and tons of tabs open at once. They're talking to seven different people in one conversation. S is probably at the same party, but I bet they're sitting down one-on-one, maybe a beer or a glass of wine, having a really good conversation with someone they just met or getting to know better. Like S has got that as a skill set, and that's a really, really good skill set if you can find the right role for them.
Yeah, I mean, we've been going through this, I've just been thinking of colleagues of mine, people mm-hmm. in my personal life and business life, and kind of just like pegging them for which one of these they're probably stronger at. And I've got in my head, I've got names and thoughts of a D, I, and S, and they're all incredible, you know, entrepreneurs or colleagues or thought leaders or whatever it is. And but again, it's not that one's better than the other. It's just kind of knowing who you are and what that is. And I just like the language, and you know, in this 50-page report, the way it breaks it down, like the actual paragraphs, not just like, it's not just charts and graphs and numbers. It literally is paragraphs of the written word of this. If somebody was sitting there, as if, you know, Adam had to give a verbal presentation with no statistics or numbers or graphs, he just had to speak as to who I am, what I like, my strength. And I think this analysis did such an incredible job with that.
For sure. For sure. The last letter, which this is an interesting one for you to have it be fairly high, is letter C. On natural, you're 48. So you're like almost at the midline. But under stress, it goes up to a 58, which goes above the midline. So it's there. It's like right in the middle. C's are compliant. So letter C's are who you want to do your taxes and paint your house. So again, like you mentioned sturgeons earlier, most surgeons have a high level of C. C's move slowly and they seek for compartmentalization and compliance. So C's probably have a very detailed section for notes. They have a detailed schedule. Things are probably color-coded very well. Things are repeatable. They aren't just on a whim and thoughtless. They're methodically placed and they're very systematized. So C's can do well in a lot of different roles, but the biggest thing about a C is that they like to work in a slow, almost constraint environment is where they will do the best. So great, like a great roles for people that are high C profiles, accountants, surgeons, people that handle your taxes, people that want to read data off the internet, you know, that maybe they invest in the stocks, people that paint or need to do a very highly, highly intricate skill. C's are going to do the best in that by far because they're super task oriented. They're slow. I don't mean dumb. I mean, they process slowly and move slowly, but they're going to do things really accurately, really well. And they'll probably do it for a long time.
So in my scenario then, where we got kind of a paradox, right? The D and the I make sense, mm-hmm. which it obviously doesn't always generally mean that S and C are low. You have in my case where C is, you know, middle of the road. So what does that paradox mean when you have these contradictory personality traits? Am I schizo or what's going on?
Well, the jury's still out on that one, but we got that. So what this means too is one of the ways I like to look at this is there's a few. Probably my favorite is what would it look like to take one of these away? So in your case, Stu, if we took the C away, Let's say that your C was similar to S, like it's 7. It basically doesn't exist, right? Like you can't really do it. And you were just a fairly high D with a little bit of I, you would still move fast. You'd probably still be great in front of a microphone and great in front of a crowd. You'd get a lot of shit done. You'd still own multiple businesses, but it would be sloppier. It wouldn't be as detailed. Like there's an element to the, you know, I've gotten to know you throughout the years. Like I can see the C come out. I don't think it's your number one preferred method to work, but like you can do it and you can do it better than a lot of people that have as much D as you. D and C are essentially at war with each other, right? D is task oriented, but it's going to move fast and want to roll, which tends to win. C is task oriented, but it wants to go slow and make things repeated and process driven. There will be times like there will be times in Stu's life when he's looking at something. And if it comes down to D and C, 9 times out of 10, D is going to win because it's so much higher on your graph. Okay, which means like it's in you more, like you think through that lens faster and more frequently. But you have that C there to help maybe take an extra second to look at it before you post it. Or maybe I should get a second set of professional eyes on this to make sure I've, you know, crossed all my T's and dotted all my I's. Yeah, I want to buy that building, but the C in me knows that there's going to be a huge unknown expense that the city's going to slap me with if I go that route. Like the D and C can be at war, but also balance each other out. Does that make sense?
It does. One of my favorite quotes is Joe Tibaldi. He's like, in life, there are times when you know you need to have an A plus on something. And there's times when you know that a C or a C minus is good enough. And you gotta call those. So it's like kind of like when you know it's got to be an A plus, that C probably shows up. Right? A little more precise. Yep. But when it's one of these like, oh, fuck, if I spend an hour on this PowerPoint or 4 hours, none one in the audience is going to fucking know the difference. Ship it. Right. I don't care. Just send it. Right.
So true. And the advantage I would say in using something like the disc, it would be for someone like you to look at their own profile and know like, all right, I'm in a moment where I just need D to win. Like I got too much shit to do. We just need to get it done and worry about how accurate this looks later. Like there's a time and place where that's a leverage point, right? Sure. And on the flip side, there might be times of like, all right, I'm building out this new CRM platform. I'm building this new project, whatever. Like I need to slow down and either hire another C around me to help see what I'm missing right now, or I need to be the person that can go do that. But just knowing like which mode does this project or the world need you to be in right now doesn't mean you're faking it. It just means like which cup do you need to go drink out of that you've got available to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think with that, if I was to look at yours a little more in-depthly, the part that makes yours really interesting is if you took the I away, you'd be a completely different person. Now, granted, if you took any letter away, you'd be a completely different person. What I mean by that is it's a rare profile, but I do have some people I've done this with and clients I currently have that are high D, high C, and they can get things done really well and they can get a lot accomplished, but they tend to like be at war with themselves constantly. When you have another letter balancing that out, like an I or an S, it changes the whole narrative. If you were like a pure D and a pure C, you'd be at war with yourself like a true Jekyll and Hyde. I want to take on the world, but I also need the world to be compliant and accurate. That can be really frustrating. It can be super frustrating. For those people, I just say like, you probably just need like a third party coach or consultant to help answer yes or no for you so you can move faster. With yours, because you have a high I, it changes this a lot. It makes you warmer, more connected with people, more friendly. If you were a pure DNC, you wouldn't be able to go work a room of people like you can right now, or be as friendly and engaging or comical as you are behind the camera. Like the eye kind of changes that, where most people that have that high a D and that high a C, they either have enough eye to balance that out like you do, or they have enough S to balance that out like you could have. If it's no eye and no S, meaning they don't like people and they're a pure DC, they tend to find a job where both of those things can thrive. So like I have a client right now who's a general contractor. He's an engineer by trade, but he's a GC. He's like a 90 D and a 90 C. it's a great job for him as long as he doesn't have to do too much that's client facing.
Sure.
But if he doesn't have to, he's great. He's fantastic at what he does, but he sucks at working with people. So I'm like, okay, so you need to hire salesmen that aren't like you. They're probably high eyes. You need to create good guardrails and good systems for them and let them just run with it. And if they know how to do it and how to do it well, and you hire the right guys or the right gals, like, you'll get to stay in your sweet spot. But if you don't, you're going to have to be that person, and you're not going to do well at that by trade.
There was a line in the in the written word section, the behavioral characteristics summary they provide. And this was the line that I think fucking just like hit it on the nail on the head that, you know, I looked over everything and I was like, okay, this makes sense. But it was this line here that just sold me on it. I'm going to tell my fiance about it. She goes, yep, nailed it. But Stu can be aggressive and direct, but still be considerate of people. Other people realize that directness, eventually they realize, is one of his great strengths. And that's always been like, you know, I've always joked around with like my mentors and people I do for executive coaching and consulting. Like, man, if I just stopped calling everyone fuckface and being such a harsh motherfucker in you know, in media, we'd have a much, it'd be a different kind of revenue game here. Like, we, you know, we can make a lot more, whatever it is. And it's just like, gosh. Yeah, but it's also the ones that tend to work with you are the ones that understand, they see through the directness. They understand, like, oh, he does care about people. And that truly is why they end up hiring you anyways, because of need for that directness. And that's just, when I read that, I was just like, oh, fuck, this thing is dead fucking on.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah. Love that.
So if someone's, let's say, you know, if anyone's listening to this and they want to reach out to you about whatever, but like about doing this and having this analysis done on their team, walk me through. So let's say someone does an analysis like this and you give them the score of their team. And when they're like, okay, that's why this isn't working. Is the recommendation then to be like, okay, well, now that you know what you didn't know, now maybe we start pursuing hires that do fit what you need on the team. And, you know, you eventually figure it out with some of the individuals that might be in the wrong role. They might be good for the company in a different role because they score it a certain way. How do you, because I got to imagine people get excited to want to do this analysis with their team with you. But then they get the results sometimes and they're like, oh, fuck, I don't want to have to fire Sally. I know she's fucking low eye or whatever the fuck it may be. But like, I, you know, what is the general next steps for somebody once they do all this? Go ahead and hit stop sharing right there for right now until we get, if we need to bring that back up to the right. Oh, there you go. Fuck yeah. So what would be the next step then at that point? Like, where do you normally see that go? Cause I feel like that could also be a moment where people are like, oh fuck, I wish I didn't open a Pandora's box and I know this shit now. Cause now it makes me want to gut my whole staff.
Yeah. It's a great question. Cause it's a natural reality that's going to happen. Right. So Here's what I see play out more often than not, is when the owner or the leader of the team, the leader of the staff, realizes, oh my gosh, that's why I'm having so much problems with this person, this team, that team. It gives them some realistic tools to say, okay, Stu, you're a super high D and you lead your team, assuming that they're all super high Ds. The truth is your entire team is a bunch of S. Okay, here's how, instead of talking to them like a D, here's what it looked like to talk to them as an S. On the flip side of that, it also allows their team to know, like, oh, so Stu's not just an asshole. Like, he just sees the world way differently than we do. It allows, like, some common ground. And what's great is it's an assessment, meaning you can't pass or fail. It doesn't mean you're good at your job or bad at your job. It's just an assessment, right? It's like, it's an MRI. It doesn't fix anything. It just tells you what's wrong or what's right. But you can come back and say, okay, all right, I know I want to keep Sally on the team, but maybe we need to move her into a different role that could be more of a sweet spot. Okay, she's got a really high S, really high C profile, so she's going to move a little slower. We have her in a role right now that's super sales-driven and moves fast. Maybe that's not the best fit. I usually just start, well, have you asked them what would be the best fit yet? Because they probably know. That's a great place to start. But maybe it's keeping the person, but pivoting to a new role. I see that happen a lot, which tends to be a really big win. I have seen it come down to just, hey, based on this assessment, it's brought up some good conversations. This person's actually not that happy. The owner's not that happy. Now we have some real data that says, like, it's time to make a change. We're going to be hiring for your position. You're no longer going to be with this company. What's interesting is when you go through the DISC route, it feels a lot more like a win, because the person that you're letting go feels like, hey, you actually took some time to like invest into why this wasn't working and just let me go. I feel like I know a little bit more about myself and what I need to look for in the next role. Now I know to ask better questions about the role at my next opportunity. I've seen that play out. I've also seen the owner come back to the realization of like, dude, we need to not make that mistake again. Like, that sucked. I don't want to have to fire more people. I need to do a better job of finding the right people. And this is where I think that tool doesn't solve all your problems. I'll never present it in a way that makes it sound like it does, but it does give you realistic tools so that you can make a lot less problems.
I agree. And like, the one thing I liked about this, and you know, let me go ahead here and just share this because I thought this was awesome. So in this PDF breakdown that Adam's able to provide for you after you take this analysis, there's not only like, it's not only an analysis of you, it gives you tools on how to communicate with those other groups so that if you do it with your team, you can start recognizing some things. Like, I mean, of course, I like looking at this and be like, Stu is energized by chaos. I was like, abso-fucking-lutely. But let's say I wasn't me, but I was hiring me and I had my DISC score, you would know potential stressors. Like, he does not like the pursuit of intangible ideas. Well, that might be somebody that you don't want to bring to the table when you're planning a very abstract project, right? So, I mean, it doesn't have very specifics. I loved also this too for job description postings. Let me get back up to the top here. Hopefully no one's getting seizures if they're watching the video. This one. So the descriptors of the various ones. I mean, these are words I would be recommending you're using when, you know, interviewing and recruiting for talent. You could use these different words in your job descriptions to help attract certain people. And I recognize many of these words from the analysis itself. Could you, for everybody, break it down? How many questions is it? Like, how do we get the results of this? Kind of explain to them what it was like to, you know, what it's like to take a DISC analysis.
It's super simple. So you can only take it from a certified DISC coach if you want the full DISC version. Okay. Now, that being said, there are free, cheapened versions of this available. You can just Google them. They're not going to give you any of what we're talking about. They'll give you kind of a generic algorithm answer. They're probably not worth your time. I've had companies go through that and they're like, we don't really know if this was good. Then they go through my version and they're like, holy shit, this is like the real version. So whether it's through me or another DISC coach that someone knows or you've worked with one, great. It takes about 20 minutes per person. They go through and they rank a bunch of different questions. They answer a bunch of different items and it literally spits out close to a 50-page report, just like we're showing on this podcast, about your own profile, your motivators, where you likely fit in the org chart, what type of words probably work well in your communication style, what doesn't. The one that I really value on this version of the DISC is that it adds the motivators section. And this part is super helpful if you actually use it. Just the DISC itself, the DISC, is great. I think it's worth its weight in gold. The motivator section is great, especially if you are investing quite a bit into some long-term staff or some big projects. Knowing how people are motivated is almost just as important as how are they wired. Like, how do they think? I'm gonna go back to sharing my screen.
Yeah, get it.
I'm going to pull mine up. Okay, can you see that, Stu?
I can.
Okay, cool. It's going to go a little headachey here for a minute. Okay, so the DISC has its main profiles that it gives you. Where do you line up on DISC, those four profiles? On top of that, it also gathers information on how are you motivated. So on Stu's, if we look at this, looking right here, his top four out of the allotted 12, his number one is commanding. This is really, really good to know. If I ever wanted to hire Stu, work with Stu. If I was just trying to understand him more, if I wanted to hire you as my coach or my consultant, this would be good for me to know and for Stu to know. Commanding basically means this. He's driven by some level of being recognized for status or accomplishment. So it doesn't mean that like Stu's got some trophy wall in his office that he just like sits back and stares at every day. And that's where he gets his, you know, sense of self-worth from. What it can mean this is like I want to be able to create my own status and get recognized for it. So for certain people, this could look like, you know, I created my own niche in the white space and here's how I did it. That's commanding as a motivator coming out. If I see someone who's really, really high on commanding, it can tell me a few things. They're probably not afraid to grow their own personal brand on social media. Now, I don't mean like superficially and they're just trying to get followers for sake of getting followers, meaning like they recognize that that's an easy tool to help them along their journey. Okay. Might also mean they're going to be really motivated by benchmarks to get there. For people that I work with that have a high motivation on commanding, like you do, 93 out of 100, it's really freaking high. The average in America is 49. Stu's almost double that. This could look like a few things. This could look like, okay, so your goal is to grow the company to X evaluation. What would that look like when you got there? Well, I'd be able to buy this or do that or take these types of vacations or send my kids to this type of school or pay for college or like those are all commanding motivators coming out. They're status symbols. They might be good ones. They don't have to be superficial by any means. They might be, well, I want my wife to not have to work. I want my kids to be able to go to private school. I want to drive a certain vehicle. I want my gym to be able to offer a certain amenity. Like that's commanding motivators coming out. That knowing that that motivates someone is wildly important if you are their boss or that's you that you're actually doing the assessment for, because it'll give you benchmarks to shoot for along the way.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember my first sales job. I had a piece of shit Jeep Grand Cherokee. And I remember seeing when I was working at the Globo Gym is when I first started getting like moving up in the Globo Gym world. And one of my other district managers, who was a colleague of mine, like lateral from me, he got a brand new fucking car. Mm-hmm. And I forget what he had at the time, but whatever. I mean, I busted my dick for 3 months. I set like company records in sales at the shittiest ghetto fucking club that we had in Antioch, Nashville area, which is really poor. And I went out and bought a GT Mustang fucking like that. And it was like, yeah, you know, showing up to the sales meetings. And that was my way of saying like, dude, I'm a real player. I'm as good as you guys are. I've only been here for a short period of time. And that, but that was every day getting in that car and starting that up. Cause I didn't have anything. I never had a nice car, but being able to roll in there, that was such a motivator for me. I remember I did the thing a lot of people do. I think I stole this from Michael Gerber, wrote myself a $100,000 check. I think you talked about this recently, or so, yeah, you shared a photo of it, made me think of this recently as well. You know, wrote myself a $100,000 check and put it in the visor that fell down on the driver's side and put it up there. And then every day driving to work, it's like, I'm going to fucking write that check for myself one day.
Yep.
So yeah, that's, I love it, man. It's dead on.
Bingo. And think about this in real time, right? If you were to work for me at our gym, and I know that this is a really big motivator for you, our relationship from employer to employee and vice versa could be so much better if we leverage this. Like if I come to Stu and let's say like you're going to grow a gym location for me as an employee and you're a 93 on commanding and you're a really high D and a really high I. All right, so if this goes really well, what are you going to be able to want from this, Stu? Well, I want to be able to buy a new car. Okay, what type of car? I want to be able to this. Okay, what color would it be? Well, I want it to be this color. Okay, what would you do with it? I park it up front every day so everybody knows that I earned that. Okay, like if I hear that coming out of your mouth and I don't do anything with that as a teammate of yours, like we just missed a massive opportunity for both of us to grow together.
Yeah, I see it. What – So you can administer this too for teams remotely. Like you could get on a call with a gym and their team, have them take this test and then administer the results and the action items and all that remotely, or is it something that's best done in person?
Most of this is remote.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Yeah, so for anyone listening, like, you could be anywhere in the world as long as you got Wi-Fi. And my website, rewiredbusinesscoaching.org, literally has this link so that you can take the DISC assessment. And I do it for $300. So you get the DISC assessment and a 90-minute follow-up Zoom coaching session to help break down these results, kind of like we're doing a little bit on this podcast. And that's for $300. It's a one-time transaction. You get a close to 50-page assessment, B, 90 minutes of coaching over Zoom to break this down. And then from there, if you decide you want some of your other team to do it or things like that, I charge $100 per assessment. If you need some coaching involved with that, then we just figure out what makes sense based on your company size. But to get going, it's $300, get you the assessment and a 90-minute breakdown with me over Zoom. I can do it with anybody in the world as long as you got good Wi-Fi. I'll literally send you a link to take the assessment. You do it on your own time. It takes about 20 minutes. It immediately emails me the results. I send them to you. We schedule a time over Zoom, and we're rolling.
I love it, man. I love it. Guys, this was I was super, super excited that that I had a chance to do this with Adam and have him look at this. And I mean, I'm telling you, so many of you guys are not going to have the HR bandwidth financially or logistically to hire a bunch of people and then, you know, weed through the shit to get to the gold. You're going to have to be better at hiring. You're going to have to be better at realizing who the fuck you are so you can attract people who will work well with you. And then analyzing them and putting into your toolbox, this is how I'm going to best communicate with this person because of who they are. This idea of like, well, I'm the boss and fucking I'm going to pull a Steve Jobs and be a cunt to everybody and people will just deal with it. You're not Steve Jobs. You didn't change the world. You're a fucking gym owner who's hoping to God to one day not have to do all the fucking work. And the only way that's done is on the backs of other people. So you better realize your key job, it's HR. It's developing a team that you can work with and that wants to work with you. And I think this is a incredible tool to do so. I really encourage everybody to fucking reach out to Adam. And I'm going to have his contact information and the website and all that linked in the show notes. But dude, thank you so much for this. I appreciate it. I'm literally, Jess is so fucking pumped. I've told her I was going to give her the results of this until I did this with you. But then, because she's done this with the company she's worked for. So I'm excited that we're going to make a little drinking game out of how close she guesses on the scores for me. So,
good luck to you, but more so good luck to Jess.
Yeah. I think she'll probably have me pegged right on this one, but, thank you so much for coming on today. I do appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Stu.
Awesome.